Hey there, Nerd Clan. This episode of the Potterverse is brought to you by MinuteWithMary.com. Guys, I'm doing a lot of fun stuff for the month of September. My VIP group on Facebook, it's the place to be, but I have heard from some friends on Instagram that they wish they could see the Minute with Mary content because they're not on the Book of Face. They are on Instagram, which is owned by Facebook, but you know, we're all good. You can actually find me by just searching Mary Larson or by searching the hashtag Minute with Mary pretty much on any social media outlet that you are. You'll find me somehow. Or you can just head on over to MinuteWithMary.com. And since you're a loyal Potterverse listener, my Twisted Epic Mascara, which is going to take your lashes to all sorts of feathery, wispy lengths, you can get at a discount. Go to MinuteWithMary.com/discount. From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and your favorite time turners, and let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Everybody, my name's Mary Larson.
My name is Blake.
Yes, it is.
And I've got two things to say. Number one, still not wearing a Hufflepuff t-shirt. Fantastic. The puffs have not let me down. I love it.
Oh my goodness.
Keep going, guys. Just keep going. Keep skating by.
Ravenclaws and Gryffindors, let's chip in. Slytherins, okay. You guys can do it too. It's the Slytherins would love to see you in a puff shirt.
No, they wouldn't.
Would have an evil cackle.
Nope, they got my back.
Slytherin. Do you think Slytherins are very loyal to each other?
Doesn't matter.
If they think someone's a jabroni, would they like to see him in a puff shirt?
Probably.
To make him eat his words.
Probably, but the good news is, not a jabroni.
You know what? For all the Slytherins who felt bad for being put down as a Slytherin for the entire book series, stand up for the puffs. Stand up and show this guy that everyone is worthy. Everyone is worthy
at
Hogwarts.
You think Slytherins are going to do that?
I do. I mean, I don't. Look at me. I'm like speaking like we're Gryffindor. Slytherins who are in a chat, let me know.
Oh, yeah, right.
All right. So,
The other thing I got to say is I would not travel with flu powder if you paid me 1,000 galleons.
You wouldn't even try it just one time.
Wouldn't even do it. No thanks. You say one wrong thing the wrong way. With my accent, I'd end up in India. Like, no chance I'd be taking flu powder. Wouldn't happen.
Okay. Yeah, well, the way you talk. Yeah. Oh, am I not listening?
How to tell when the hosts aren't listening.
You're welcome, Blake. You are welcome.
Freaking Mary. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, you love me, don't you?
I do. With my whole heart.
Okay, so...
Even though you don't listen.
I don't. I sometimes try. All right, everybody. So tonight's chapter is at Flourish and Blotts, which I'm just so excited. I loved the at in the name of this chapter. It's not just Flourish and Blotts, but it's at Flourish and Blotts.
That's right. Victoria here on Facebook says, hashtag not a jabroni. That's the new shirt. Like it.
So, you know... there's so much goodness in this chapter. I think this may be my favorite chapter that we have read so far.
You want to know something that's really creepy?
What?
It's like mine too.
Are we having a moment?
We are.
From this moment.
We are total nerds.
We are, and this is why we're married.
You know what this deserves?
Tell me. Lucius Malfoy?
It's for you and I, you
maybe.
Hoop.
Oh. You're welcome.
Oh, man, Mary.
Okay. So there's just a lot that happens in this chapter. A lot, guys.
You are on another level tonight.
You're welcome,
You're not
man.
In savage mode. You're like on Planet Zippy today.
I don't want to be on Zippy.
You are.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying I'm having a problem picking a quote. Do you have a favorite quote?
You want me to keep vamping for you? Or what do you want me to do?
I didn't know you were vamping for me. My goodness gracious.
Fine.
Mr. Malfoy's lip curled. I have not been visited yet. The name Malfoy still commands a certain respect, yet the ministry grows ever more meddlesome. There are rumors about a new Muggle Protection Act. No doubt that flea-bitten, Muggle-loving fool Arthur Weasley is behind it.
You know, this actually probably would have been one of the quotes I would have picked if you read. So
it's like we're married,
Blake. It's like we're married. And Jennifer here actually has a comment on that. She says, when Mary got so nerdy, she forgot she was married. Well, guys, just, you know, if you want to keep supporting us as a married couple, even though Mary forgets it, you can just go to maryandblake.com, and we have a whole ton of stuff that's there. If you are into more than just Harry Potter, you love Outlander, you love Game of Thrones, you love Gilmore Girls, you love, what else? The Leftovers. What else are we talking
about? Outlander.
I said Outlander.
I wasn't listening again.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I have to play it again.
How to tell when the hosts aren't listening.
If you love The Crown, if you love The Handmaid's Tale.
I just hate when you go on run-on sentences. That's why.
I'm trying to tell everybody what we do.
We do a lot of stuff, guys.
Oh, Marvin, you aren't zippy today. If you like all that stuff, go to maryandblake.com. And if you find any kind of value in what we do, as well as getting me in a Hufflepuff t-shirt and picking what I have to say for our new intro, and also Blake's book club and getting early access to all the things that we do here, including some very cool Q&A sessions that we've been having lately on the page, just go to jointhenerdclan.com and become a distinguished illustrious member there, and join all the nerds in that group while we're at it.
Because
it's a fantastic community.
Truly.
And you don't want to miss out on it. Marvin, are you ready for this?
I was born ready.
Let's do it.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
Am I born ready? I knew it was late. I was 2 weeks late.
What?
Being born. I just said I was born ready. Really, I wasn't.
No, you weren't.
I was lazy. I was sleeping. Because that's what I like to do. It's my favorite. Okay, so... little synopsis for At Flourish and Blotts. The boys, Ron and Harry, they flew powder all the way to Diagon Alley because they need to get their books. The whole family goes there, but Harry ends up at Borgin and Burke's, makes a big mess of himself. Then they end up at Flourish and Blotts, where they see Gilderoy Lockhart and Lucius Malfoy and Arthur Weasley get into a brawl.
Oh, dad fight.
Dad
fight? Nothing like an old man fight.
Like, I have never seen an old man fight.
Oh, I've seen a couple.
I've seen the teenage girl fights. I've seen teenage boy fights. I've seen adult woman fights, thank you, Housewives of New York.
Oh, yes.
Or Jersey.
Jersey and New York. But especially Jersey.
Flipping tables.
Oh, Teresa.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Oh, Teresa.
So, yeah, a lot happens in this chapter. I mean, you and I just said in the intro that this is probably our favorite chapter so far. And we actually had a question in our live chat saying, so far in Chamber of Secrets or so far in the Harry Potter series? And I am going to tell you, this is my favorite so far in the Harry Potter series, book one, and now as we go into book two. I will get back to you how this fares versus other chapters, but I feel like this...
I'm sorry, continue. Yeah, please.
I just feel like this is when, like, you went from reading a children's book to, oh my goodness gracious, this is actually a 1,000-piece puzzle that you have to put together.
Right. Right. I mean, you got a sense of that in the first book, especially in the later chapters. But this chapter is the first chapter where things definitely feel larger, and we're getting into some territory here that, you know, we got a taste of what the kind of world looked like in the Wizarding World in the first book. But most of the time, like I've always said, it's wee Hogwarts.
Oh, yes.
But this one...
Anything from the trolley?
This one is a little bit more involved.
Dark.
Little bit dark, little bit ugly, little bit danger, that this is not a pretty happy kind of place. This is...
You know what is fun,
though? You go down the wrong
alley,
you start messing with the wrong people, you're going to get hurt.
You won't get hurt at the Burrow unless your name's Errol.
Right. No, why would you? Because you'd be a fantastic owl.
I just love how different Harry views the Burrow versus the Dursleys. You know, he talks about how everything was like in its place at the Dursleys. Even I think when Nymphadora Tonks comes to rescue Harry and help him leave Privet Drive, she even comments about like how orderly the Dursleys' house is. You know, I think just the wizards, they're a bit more laid back, but the Weasleys are certainly laid back. So we of course, are having a grand old time.
Yeah. The thing I really like about this chapter is the way that it begins. I mean, I love the beginning. It's life at the Burrow was as different as possible from the life in Privet Drive. The Dursleys liked everything neat and ordered. The Weasleys' house burst with strange and unexpected. Harry got a shock the first time he looked in the mirror over the kitchen mantelpiece, and it shouted, "Tuck your shirt in, Scruffy!" The ghoul in the attic howled and dropped pipes whenever he felt things were getting too quiet. And small explosions from Fred and George's bedroom were considered perfectly normal.
Totes.
What Harry found most unusual about life at Ron's, however, wasn't the talking mirror or the clanking ghoul. It was the fact that everybody there seemed to like him.
They like him so much that he eventually gets to be part of the Weasley family.
Absolutely.
So great, so great. So, of course, yeah, the kids then get their letters. They get in touch with Hermione briefly, yes, of course, yes. But then they get their school letters and their book list for, at least Harry, for book year two. The standard book of spells, grade two, you know, normal. But then we get Break with a Banshee, Gadding with Ghouls, Holidays with Hags, Travels with Trolls, Voyages with Vampires, Wanderings with Werewolves, and The Year with the Yeti, all by Sir Gilderoy Lockhart.
And I think this is why I... love this chapter because Gilderoy Lockhart.
He's in for the money.
Oh, Gilderoy Lockhart. He don't mess around.
I mean, imagine him. He gave this list to every kid at Hogwarts. All 1,000 children just had to buy all 7 of these books, which, as we hear from the Weasleys, don't come cheap.
Right.
You know, so maybe what, $30 a pop for a small book? You know, his books are not long.
No. They're probably like. They're not like 12 font. They're probably like 18 font.
And he has like the first letter of the paragraphs really big to take up even more space.
Oh, absolutely. And he's writing in Courier. He's not writing in Times New Roman.
Oh, no.
No. He's a Courier kind of guy.
He needs some flourishes in it.
Yes.
But so imagine that, how he's like, I'm running a little low on funds. I need to sell some more books.
Let's get out there. Let's make some more stories.
Some passive income.
Smart passive income.
There you go, Gilderoy.
Work smarter, not harder.
Oh, my goodness like gracious. It. And also we get dripped throughout this... Ooh, dripped. Ooh. Just little peaks of Ginny's infatuation with Harry.
And it's so cute. She drops her porridge and she doesn't talk. And she's just like...
She puts her elbow in the butter.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Harry's the only one that notices, but I think it's interesting that Harry is the one that notices.
Right.
You know, so like, yeah, he's not really into Ginny right now, but A, he's a kind soul, but B, he's paying attention to Ginny.
Right, absolutely.
He even tries to talk with her. You know, he says, oh, you're going to Hogwarts?
And this chapter, I think that's why this chapter is really, really that good, because it not only does it give you these small little snippets into the relationships that these people are sharing, like how Ginny just can't seem to get anything right.
Bless her heart.
Until finally it comes the conflict at the end where Ginny has this kind of quiet power about her.
Dare say brave.
But not only that, this chapter, again, but even more so than previous chapters, sets up so many of the impending things that are coming their way for this book. I mean, we're setting up the conflict with the Malfoys. We're setting up a class distinction further going down that road.
We're setting up the fact that there are dark objects in this wizarding world.
Absolutely.
We've just seen like merry little things, but really there's this very dark side. And it's so big that they have like their own streets and their own shops.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely, and that we have things with Gilderoy Lockhart. I My love of Gilderoy Lockhart
yeah.
knows no bounds.
I know.
It knows no bounds.
And yet, once again, you haven't even read this book. So your just love of him is from the movies alone.
yeah. It comes straight from the films. And I think that's a reasonable thing. But what I have to do is I have to skip ahead.
Okay.
Because Gilderoy Lockhart gives me the warm and fuzzies.
Excuse me. Hold on. We're skipping Borgin and Burke?
Well, we're not going to skip it. I'm just skipping ahead. I'm skipping ahead because I have to bring up.
Okay.
Just
hold on. Let me just put my thumb in the area that I. Yep.
Well, if you want to,
no, no, as long as we can get back there, because there's a lot of magical things. Oh,
we absolutely will. but maybe it's because of Kenneth Branagh.
Are you making like Gilderoy Lockhart shirts this week?
I'm absolutely going to. I'm going to do one with him smiling and like a little
twing.
Ting on his teeth, like it's absolutely going to happen. Okay. But I want to read this. It says, "Ladies and gentlemen," he said loudly, waving for quiet. "What an extraordinary moment this is. The perfect moment for me to make a little announcement I've been sitting on for some time. When young Harry here stepped into Flourish and Blots today, he only wanted to buy my autobiography, which I shall be happy to present him now, free of charge." The crowd applauded again. "He had no idea," Lockhart continued, giving Harry a little shake that made his glasses slip to the end of his nose, "that he would surely be getting much, much more than my book. Magical me. He and his schoolfellows will, in fact, be getting the real magical me. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I have great pleasure and pride in announcing that this September I will be taking up the post of Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft. In wizardry. It's just the way that he speaks and the way that it's delivered.
Yes.
And absolutely free of charge.
Oh, my goodness.
He is the best.
He really is quite a hoot.
Oh, he is the best.
He's just a delight to read and to dance around in his mind.
I need to come up with a fantastic. I think everybody who listens to Outlandercast knows my Claire voice. I need a Gilderoy Lockhart voice.
You do.
I'm going to come up with one.
Okay.
Oh, God, he's so great.
He truly is. We're going to have some really fun moments with him.
He's the best. All right, so I just had to bring that up because...
Oh, no, honey.
That was something...
Your love is going to be a topic of conversation in this book, and I'm really excited to eat it up with you.
Oh, yeah.
But I think another one of the reasons why you and I both enjoy this chapter is, like you said, we got to see the dark side, and this is where things get a little creepy,
yep.
albeit spooky. So Harry, of course, travels by flu powder, coughs, ends up in the wrong area, ends up on Nocturne Alley, of course, breaks his glasses again, to which point I wrote down in my notes, what's the scoop with LASIK? Like, okay, bippity boppity boo them eyes, you know, like if you can have bone growth drink when your bones are magically gooed out of your body,
right.
or you know, a simple little pumpkin juice or something to break for your broken wrist, why does Harry Potter still wear glasses?
That's a good point,
right?
You'd think that he would get some LASIK, or he's got at least some magical
contact.
Yeah.
Like never have to change out contacts. Self-cleansing contacts. Imagine Arthur Weasley learning, like, they're scared enough that there's dentistry. Imagine Arthur Weasley talking through LASIK.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Like, if Hermione's parents were like, oh, yes, we had a good summer. I got to hang low a little bit. I had LASIK. Oh, what's that? Oh, when the lasers cut open your eyes and remove.
You just see his head go.
The things the Muggles think up these days.
I know. He's already busy enough saying, wow, they get around. You know, like, man, you got to give it to them. They find great ways of getting around without magic.
Okay. And like, yes, we do. So Harry, of course, wakes up. It breaks his glasses again. And he's in this dark shop. And I think that Borgin and Burke's was your favorite shop when we went to the Wizarding World.
Absolutely was.
Right?
Absolutely was.
So, of course, he could look through the window and he realized it wasn't Diagon Alley. He tries to get to the door. But, of course, his arch nemesis, Draco Malfoy, is there.
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm so excited.
How do you feel? There are a couple of things in this chapter that I don't like. So the first thing is Harry just happens to end up in Borgin and Burke's and just happens to go into a closet and just happens to be in the same place that the Malfoys end up. And the Malfoys end up having these conversations about selling things. And it just seems like it's a kind of narrativium that like happens, like the book demands that it happens.
Yeah.
So it does.
Yeah.
I get annoyed with that.
Okay. Well,
and the same thing with all of a sudden Hagrid being in Nocturnally.
Hagrid was buying flesh.
I know, but it just happens to be at the same time as Harry. Like, again, I feel like it's narrativium. It's like the book demands that these things happen, so there's no real organic reason for them to happening other than just because.
Okay. Can we get over that point?
Yeah, well, I wanted your thoughts on that.
No, I agree. I agree. I think that like this book is super small and just a couple of things just have to happen.
Yep.
You know? It's like, yeah, like you said, he could have come out in any fireplace.
Sure.
He didn't accidentally say Borgin and Burke's.
Right. He said diagonally.
But, well, like, in the movie. And, yeah.
Yeah, but how does that translate to Nocturnally?
I mean, maybe he was coughing and it was like Nocturnally. It was just a bunch of coughing.
Yeah, sure.
There's your Nocturne.
Emilius is saying on Facebook, Blake, this is Outlander Voyager all over again.
Thank you, Amelia. That's why I'm like, just move on, Blake. It just happens that Claire and Jamie find each other out of all the islands.
Can't wait to do Blake's book club on Voyager. It's going to be great.
So what I do love about this is, you know, Harry, of course, sees Malfoy and quickly hides into a cabinet, which is actually the Vanishing Cabinet.
That's my next question. I was going to ask you if this was, in fact, the Vanishing Cabinet.
Yes. And he's hiding in this cabinet, Draco Malfoy points out the Hand of Glory, which he actually uses to let in all the Death Eaters in Book 6. He also points at the opal necklace that many Muggles have died from, which is the necklace that he accidentally gets. Is it Katie? Katie Bell?
Yes, it's Katie Bell.
He poisons her with it because he means it for Dumbledore.
Yes.
So I love that Draco, young Draco, is seeing these items, is hearing about them, seeing what they're doing, and is already interested. And ends up actually going to the shop and purchasing it later.
Right.
It's, you know, Harry's memory. Maybe Harry couldn't see the opals. Maybe he couldn't see it. But he is here to hear Draco's insistence that he wants a broom. He wants to be, you know, on the Quidditch team. But the real reason that they're there is because Lucius Malfoy needs to get rid of some stuff.
Right. And it's all dark magic stuff that they're having a bunch of raids, the Ministry of Magic, and he needs to get rid of them, and he needs to get rid of them now.
Yep.
Because he doesn't want to get caught with them. And the cool thing about it, you know, what Borgin says to him is, man, you know, if you're telling me what you got here, and if the stories are right, you ain't giving me half of what you got at your house.
That's what he doesn't say that to his face. He says that after Lucius leaves. But exactly. And Harry overhears that.
Right.
That, yeah, in the manor, in this, like, wealthy manor that they have, he's got a lot of spooky, scary stuff.
And, you know, despite the fact that I kind of, you know, don't like the coincidence of it all in this chapter, the way that the chapter is written, especially the effect of the flu powder, I really like it. It's how it's written is fantastic. It says, squinting through his glasses, he saw a blurred stream of fireplaces and snatched glimpses of the rooms beyond. His bacon sandwiches were churning inside of him.
Can you just like picture that taste? It was
like so much like burping up Bacos, like
I don't even know what Bacos are.
It's Bacos. It's bacon.
Is it like dog food?
No, Baco. No, you're thinking of
what?
You're thinking of the commercial. Bacon.
Yeah.
No, Bacos are the things that it's like dried up bacon that goes on your salad.
Like Parmesan cheese.
You never heard of Bacos before?
No.
Oh my God, you never heard of Bacos?
Sweetheart, we eat like real bacon.
Yeah, well, I know we do, but back when we were kids, Bacos was like a thing. Like, you put Bacos on your salad.
Listen, my parents put lentils on my salad, okay? You want protein, honey? Eat lentils.
You've never heard of Bacos?
Blake, I've told you about the diet I needed to ingest when I was growing up.
I am playing the Baco's theme when we close
this show. My parents went on
up.
A cabbage kick. I ate cabbage for like 2 months. It was terrible. My house always smelled like pee.
Oh, man. My house always smelled
it
like
pee. It did, Blake. It did.
Okay.
So this is why I relate to Harry. Like, I would have preferred bread.
Oh, man, Baco's. Well, it says his bacon sandwiches were churning inside of him. He closed his eyes again, wishing it would stop. And then he fell face forward onto the stone and felt his glasses shatter. Dizzied and bruised, covered in soot, he got gingerly to his feet, holding his broken glasses up to his eyes. He was quite alone, but where he was, he had no idea. I love how that's written. It reminds me of Outlander when they say that, you know, she goes through a car accident when she travels through the stones. And the same thing, like just that little bit of the bacon coming up and churning in his stomach, it makes it feel real. It makes it feel like,
this is a thing.
It's sloshing around there. And even though I didn't like how Harry just ends up at the right place at the right time, I think the book is trying to explore here, and I can't wait to get your thoughts, Mary, is this theme of what is class? Mm-hmm. What does it mean to exist within the class systems in the wizarding world? And what is your identity? What is your place? Is it a place of where you're there and then you're stuck? Or can you come out of that? And what can you make of your identity? And there's so much here, especially in this interaction at Borgin and Burks between the Malfoys with Borgin and how Borgin treats them to their face, but away from them, he treats them another way. Mm-hmm. And the Malfoy saying something along the lines of like, you know, the Malfoy name still has some respect, but they're getting more meddlesome. And it continues on with Lockhart and bringing Harry on and, what did you think about that kind of theme being explored, not only in this chapter, but for the rest of the book?
I really enjoy it. I think when you're a child and you're reading this, you know of like class system, but you more know of like cliques, you know what I mean? Like the cool kids, the kids with the cool clothes, the jocks, the nerds, all these different things. So when you're reading this, you know what it feels like to be ostracized. But then as an adult or as you grow a bit older, it really is incredible because there are different cities or towns where your name does mean something, where your address or your car really does mean something. And it means something to those particular communities. And I enjoy this because it's very like Great Gatsby. You know, it just brings you back to that whole, like, there is this echelon, whether we like it or not. Blake and I are obviously not that echelon.
Clearly not. I'm wearing a Paddy's Irish Pub shirt.
Where, you know, it's... What I like about this is it makes you say, I don't want to be part of that. Like, I don't want to be another Malfoy. Yeah. I don't want to have that kind of respect by a name.
Victoria here on Facebook asks a great question. That class issue always really bothered me in this series. Do magical people also have classes and money and status? And I textually, even in the first book, but especially this book, you can see it right away. Yes, absolutely. And it's even in the subtle interactions with Borgin where Draco says, "Can I have that?" pointing at the withered hand on its cushion. "Ah, the hand of glory," said Mr. Borgin, abandoning Mr. Malfoy's list and scurrying over to Draco. "Insert a candle and it gives light only to the holder. Best friends of thieves, the plunderers, your son has a fine taste, sir. I hope my son will amount to more than a thief or a plunderer, Borgin," said Mr. Malfoy coldly. And Mr. Borgin said quickly, "No offense, sir, no offense meant. Though if his school marks don't pick up," said Mr. Malfoy, more coldly still, "that may indeed be all he is fit for." And then he continues on talking about Hermione and saying how the teachers have favorites and yada yada. I love how these little bits of class are being inculcated and imbued in these little discussions.
Yeah, no, it is interwoven. And I think to our friend's question, like, yeah, there is class and there's monetary differences and how much people are taking in. I mean, think about this. Arthur Weasley works for the Ministry of Magic. Mm-hmm. Yes, he has a bajillion children, but still, like, he is not paid that well. It's just odd. You'd think that if they were magical, maybe they could multiply money. Obviously, that's one of the rules they're not allowed to do, but it is tough.
Even this interaction here with Draco and his dad, when Draco's dad says, "Touch nothing, Draco." Malfoy, who had reached for the glass eyes, said, "I thought you were going to buy me a present." "I said I would buy you a racing broom," said his father, drumming his fingers on the counter. "What's the good of that if I'm not in the house team?" said Malfoy, looking sulky and bad-tempered. "Harry Potter got a Nimbus 2000 last year. Special permission from Dumbledore so he could play for Gryffindor. He's not even that good. It's just because he's famous. Famous for having a stupid scar on his forehead." Malfoy bent down to examine a shelf full of skulls. "Everyone thinks he's so smart. Wonderful Potter with his scar and his broomstick. You have told me this at least a dozen times already," said Mr. Malfoy.
Can you imagine?
A quelling look at his son.
"At least a dozen times.
And I would remind you that it is not prudent to appear less than fond of Harry Potter. Not when most of our kind regard him as the hero who made the Dark Lord disappear." Ah, Mr. Borgin. This idea of identity and status and fame and what that brings all comes to a bubble here in this very short conversation between Draco and his father. Very special stuff as it relates to how they see Harry, how Lucius sees Harry as a commodity to be cultivated, not hated.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting thing, yeah. Only because it's not prudent. Like, it's for something to be prudent, it means it's not practical. It's not wise.
Mm-hmm.
And why is it wise to like Harry? Only because of the status that it brings.
Correct.
The Malfoy family.
And also, I think there's also this questioning that's going on amongst the Death Eaters, because Harry did defeat the Dark Lord and he is still so young. So could he potentially be the next Dark Lord?
But Draco brings up a good point. Is the scar and what Harry did, is he like a Kardashian? Is he famous for being famous?
Yes.
Harry, you think so?
As of right now, yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So yeah. Is Draco all that wrong? That's the real question.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that Harry... I think Harry is an extraordinary person, mm-hmm. but his scar is what gave him the fame and gets those extraordinary qualities noticed by others. I think there's a lot of extraordinary people who are a bit more on the introverted side. You know, I don't think that Harry isn't in anything for the fame and glory. So I think that if it were up to Harry and didn't have the scar and everybody in the world didn't know his name, he mm-hmm. would still have done these things and made these same choices, but maybe the whole world wouldn't have known.
Right. Absolutely. All right. Continue. Sorry.
I just wanted to go down that path. No, I'm digging it. You know, we get Hagrid who finds Harry, and he's quite disappointed with him. "What are you doing down Nocturne Alley?" Like, he lets them know this is not a place to be seen. He explains to Harry why he was down there. But I just love that he's, like, dusting him off. You know, Hagrid loves Harry as a friend, but also as a caretaker. And he's just, like, repeatedly trying to clean off this very dirty child. Mm-hmm. And Harry has to even duck away from him because he's being cared for too much. And Hagrid makes sure that he meets up with Hermione and with the Weasleys, and they head on over to Gringotts Bank. So we get another viewing of this marvelous building. That's the bank that, like, kind of gives Harry hope. Like, yeah. It's the familiar thing as they're leaving Nocturne Alley. And they have this really awkward exchange where Harry's tons and tons of money. He's loaded. And the Weasleys, Mrs. Weasley, like, goes in the back corner and, like, scrapes the floor to see if there's anything left.
I know.
Poor thing.
And again, it gets back to the idea of identity. And mm-hmm. The Weasleys are poor. They're poor.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And Harry already knows what that feels like. Well, not what it feels like to be poor necessarily, but he knows what it feels like to now have something and see the way that they are struggling, that the Weasleys are struggling to make ends meet.
Yes.
And he has all this money and he's like trying to hide it. And, you know, does that money make the Weasleys jealous? Does it make them feel a certain way? Mm-hmm. Like, all of these things keep playing into it. What is Harry and what is his relationships to the Weasleys now that he has money?
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
And how they don't, and how he's not even like offering any money. Right,
he's bought things for them before. Like, he buys them a little treat in this chapter. He bought, you know, stuff from the trolley the first year. I think it's a really awkward situation for him, because on the flip side, this is the only money he has. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't have parents who can do little side hustles or make a bonus at work. Like, this needs to help him survive, mm-hmm. possibly help him put a down payment on a house or who knows what.
Sure.
So it is. And how badly would that make the Weasleys feel to have this 12-year-old boy giving them money?
That's a great point. I think that's a great point. Because the Weasleys just treat him like a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about that last chapter where the Weasleys are there and they're not treating him like Harry Potter, Harry freaking Potter. But
Harry
also,
freaking Potter.
They're also not treating him just like a friend. They're treating him as though he is part of their family and one of their children. And I don't ever see the Weasleys ever asking their kids for any kind of financial recompense, if you will.
I honestly don't know how they can afford all these books with that little money.
Well, you get into that later part of the chapter where, you know, Lucius is saying, or I think it was Draco saying, you know, your parent, they're going to starve for a while,
yeah.
for a month just to pay
honestly,
for these books.
Well, luckily Harry donates his books into Ginny's cauldron, which I hope is magical, like Hermione's little bag, because that was a lot of books that he was given by Gilderoy Lockhart, and he just dumps them inside Ginny's cauldron. Like, oh, here, you can have these. And of course, that's when that interaction happens that you were talking about before, where Ginny stands up to Draco Malfoy, who she doesn't even know.
Yep.
She can just tell automatically, like, this is a bully. He's, you know, not speaking fondly of my crew, so I'm just going to stand up to it.
And it's great, too, because Harry takes the books from Lockhart, but says, no, I'll pay for mine. I'll pay for mine. You take that. And obviously, I think part of it is because, you know, he wants to be able to help the Weasleys
mm-hmm.
out. But the other part of it for me, too, is when you take something for free, that means you owe something.
Oh.
It means you're... That means you're obligated at that point. That you owe a favor. You know, it's like the Godfather. You know, you do me a favor and I won't forget. But and if I do you a favor, I won't forget. There'll be one day when I come knocking on your door and you're going to have to do something
like
for
that.
Me. And what I'm saying is, I mean, he's not going to go, you know, Godfather
yes.
on people. But I'm
no,
saying,
I
feel like he doesn't want to be... obligated towards anyone.
Well, he makes sure that he gets the trio some strawberry and peanut butter ice creams. Where is this in my life? Strawberry and peanut butter?
That sounds terrible.
That sounds so yummy. It's like a peanut butter sandwich with strawberry jam.
No, God, please, no!
But
no.
And ice cream.
Nope.
No!
I actually would like some right now. So if anyone knows of a place where you can get strawberry and peanut butter ice cream, maybe you can get it down in Universal.
Yeah, no. Anything peanut butter, other than actual peanut butter in a sandwich, I'm out on.
Okay.
okay, sure.
So,
well, you suck, Blake, but I'll keep going.
They head on into Flourishing Plots, and there is actually like a camera taking places there, snapping pictures because Gilderoy Lockhart's there. The Muggle parents of Hermione are there, and Arthur Weasley gets so excited that he is offering to buy them a drink. They have like 5 coins.
Talking about escapades.
Buddy. How are you going to buy Mr. and Mrs. Granger a bevy?
All right.
When you got to buy all your kids.
And he's like,
oh
my God,
books.
They're changing the Muggle money over. They're doing a currency exchange.
So cute.
Isn't that awesome?
I wonder how they exchange it on the flip side. Like, how do you exchange Muggle money?
Do you
have some like money ministry that is Muggle related that does know? Because of course the Ministry of Magic and the Prime Minister of England know each other.
Mm-hmm.
They know the truth. But I wonder, like, how do you switch over the money?
Right. And
so, or are there people who just want to collect it and they'll buy it?
Right. You know, you got to collect this, you know, somewhere. Yeah. I love how you don't hear from Hermione's parents at all. Like, you still haven't heard from them. They're muggles, and they're in this kind of world, and they're there, but they're not saying anything to anybody.
They are overwhelmed.
Way overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And of course, Hermione is already a tornado as it is. You know, she's running from shop to shop, trying to get everything, trying to meet Harry.
She's got the itinerary list listed for them. Yes. At 8:20, we're going to be going to the Three Broomsticks, or we're going to be going to get ice cream, or we're going to go to the bank. Like, so we get into the shop, and Lockhart makes this huge scene with Harry, as you were talking about earlier. Right, you know, like, oh my goodness, little did Harry Potter know. And all the women are swooning all over the place. We find out, of course, he is going to be the next Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher.
Right.
Which, once again, rumor, I guess, hasn't gotten to him that it's cursed.
And I will give him it free of charge.
Free of charge.
I can't wait to make that shirt. Can't wait.
Oh my goodness.
It's just
going to
say free of charge and his smile with a ding on his teeth. Can't wait.
Ron does a little ding at Draco because Draco has this interaction, of course, with Ginny. And Ron says to Draco, like, oh, I bet you're really surprised to see Potter here. Because remember, they think that Dobby was sent by the Malfoys to keep Harry from sent to school. So Ron's just said, I'm like, oh, I bet you're really surprised he's here. Like, look who's here. Your house elf couldn't stop him. And that doesn't really happen. And then, of course, we've got like the little boy fight, and then we've got the man fight.
Oh, and just before the man fight, the dad fight, fight of the ages.
Yes.
We have this great interaction between Arthur and Lucius. All those raids, I hope they're paying you overtime. He reached into Ginny's cauldron and extracted from amidst the glossy Lockhart books a very old, very battered copy of A Beginner's Guide to Transfiguration. Obviously not, he said. Dear me, what's the use of being a disgrace to the name of wizard if they don't even pay you well for it? Mr. Weasley flushed darker than either Ron or Ginny. We have a very different idea of what disgraces the name of wizard, Malfoy.
So good, Arthur.
Oh, man, that was a burn. A burn for the ages.
Yes!
Like, you think, you know when you feel like you own somebody, and then they just come back at you, and you're like, you've been pounded into the center of the earth.
This would have been something I would have thought on the way home. Like, I would have had Malfoy being like, oh, what's the use of being a disgrace to the name of wizard if they don't even pay you well for it? And then I would have been like, and like, left. And then the car ride home, I would have been like, you know what I should have said? I should have said, we have a very different idea of what disgraces the name of wizard, Malfoy. That's what I should have said.
Yeah, where's my time turner?
But Arthur does it right away because he's ready.
Right.
He is ready.
And he just takes that freaking metal cauldron and it goes flying and they start fighting. And the funny thing is I
who think, threw the first punch?
I feel like that was Weasley.
I agreed.
Yeah, that was agreed. Weasley. The funny thing is that like we should have known reading this chapter instantly that this was a setup. We should have known immediately that from Malfoy to have a fight in public, you know, someone who is talking about the Malfoy name of having respect and some title and how he interacts with people, how he just assumes how he's so much better than everybody else. He wouldn't even dare waste his time dealing with the Weasleys, wouldn't even waste his time dealing with a fight of all things. We should have known that this was a setup from the beginning. Would you agree?
No. I mean, he's being majorly inconvenienced right now. He has treasures in his house that he now has to sell or get rid of or hide. And it's all because of Arthur Weasley.
Mm-hmm.
He calls him without even like speaking to his face, like that flea-bitten. Lucius Malfoy is all set with Arthur Weasley. Right. I think he has it more out for Arthur Weasley. But then even Arthur's picking up on it while we're at Gringotts. He overhears the kids saying Lucius Malfoy, and he's like, oh, what about him? These two guys, I bet you they went to Hogwarts together, and I bet you they had a crush in the same girl, and she like blew them both off, so they're both bitter and mad from there on out. Or maybe like they were neck and neck, and like potions clash or something, and like who's going to be valedictorian? Neither of them. But you know what I mean? Like, I feel like these guys have been talking trash about each other
for a long time.
Forever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, get a life, man.
And this is great because you're getting a, just from these interactions, you're getting a sense of the world, but you're also getting the sense, again, of the relationships that these people share. And it's done via their actions. It's done via the dialogue, but it's so well crafted by the author that you immediately understand the class system, how they interact, the danger of Nocturnality, Borgen and Burks, how it feels kind of creepy. And you, again, I have to go back to my boy Gilderoy. That's right. He's reached my boy status. He is in the my boy category. I love the way that the author writes this. We can actually meet him, Hermione squealed. I mean, he's written almost the whole book list. The crowd seemed to be made up of mostly of witches around Mrs. Weasley's
around that
age. And how, and this is me now talking, but how Mrs. Weasley just has a crush on him, just like all of the other. It kind of reminds me of Outlander a little bit, how they all just crush on these characters and they meet them and they freak out. It's the same thing. And I love that. I love that because it's so real. It's like all these little fangirls going over to see their like their favorite
thing. It's not fangirl, though. It's fan women.
Right. A harassed-looking wizard stood at the door, saying, "Calmly, please, ladies. Don't push. There. Mind the books now." Harry, Ron, and Hermione squeezed inside a long queue wound right up the back of the shop where Gilderoy Lockhart was signing his books. They each grabbed a copy of A Break with a Banshee and sneaked up to the line where the rest of the Weasleys were standing with Mr. and Mrs. Granger. "Oh, there you are. Good," said Mrs. Weasley. She sounded breathless and kept patting her hair. "We'll be able to see him in a minute." Gilderoy Lockhart came slowly into view, seated at a table, surrounded by large pictures of his own face, all winking and flashing dazzlingly white teeth at the crowd. The real Lockhart was wearing robes of forget-me-not blue, which exactly matched his eyes. His pointed wizard's hat was set at a jaunty angle on his wavy hair. You get such a real tactile sense of the crowdedness of it. You know when you get in those big kind of crowds, you get hot and sweaty.
I don't do well in those
crowds. And it just smells like bad breath.
Yes.
And, you know, and God knows what else is going on in there.
Yeah.
I love how this is written, especially with Mrs. Weasley patting her hair, making sure everything's okay.
Yeah.
People bumping into each other. Mm-hmm. And then the pictures of Lockhart smiling at him. The way that the author writes this, she has done a fantastic job of giving you the characteristics of Lockhart right off the jump.
Yes.
Right off the jump, you understand who he is, what he is, why he is, and the fame that he tries to take advantage of with Harry when he's saying, "Oh, you and I, we're going to make the front page."
But what is interesting here is we don't get any sense that he hasn't done these things.
No. We
picture him as being like that gallant person from the movie Up, the guy that was in the blimp and everyone thought was so famous, Voyager.
Yeah.
You know, like kind of like an Indiana Jones.
Yep.
You know, just
months,
yummy.
Months.
Yes. Yeah. Charles Muntz. You know, like someone just super famous and daring and ready to take on adventure. That's what you see him as. Mm-hmm. And he's gorgeous.
He's a gorgeous man.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you got to say about this?
Well, I just think that it's really interesting. You know, you're talking about like, oh, isn't it fortuitous that the Malfoys are there when the Weasleys are there? And like, I completely think that, you know, this was his plan. He and Arthur hate each other so much. So this was his plan to like give this book to one of Arthur's kids. Mm-hmm. Then maybe Arthur gets caught with it. You know, like Arthur's trying.
Absolutely.
This is at his house. And he's like, I need to get rid of this. Oh my gosh. Like all the Weasleys are here. Perfect. And it's going to open the Chamber of Secrets because Voldemort had given this book to him before he died. Mm-hmm. Voldemort had given, had trusted it to Lucius knowing that he was a Death Eater and was going to use it to open the Chamber of Secrets to kill all the Mudbloods, obviously.
Sure.
So this is like this is just awesome for him. He can open the Chamber of Secrets,
yep,
kill all the Muggleborn, like keep the wizard blood clean. You know, this is something he really cares about, and get Arthur Weasley in trouble.
Yeah, and not only kill all the Muggleborn, but extricate all of the things that are involved with Muggles at all. I mean, whether it is the... It is Arthur Weasley, but that whole... You get the sense that he mm-hmm. wants everything to do with Muggles out of the wizarding world.
Yeah.
That they shouldn't run parallel. They should be on a different plane of existence altogether.
Fun fact, Borgin and Burks is where Voldemort worked after he graduated from Hogwarts School of Wizardry.
Who?
Voldemort.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He worked there for a wee bit. And the teachers were quite upset, thinking that he was, you know, underestimating his potential.
Yeah.
But of course, he loved the dark arts. It was a perfect fit. All right. Are you ready to do a different perspective?
Yes, absolutely. Let's do it.
I have one, and I know you have one, so we're going to double up.
Well, yeah. Well, you do yours, and I'll do mine.
Holy cricket. You're Harry Potter. I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
Mrs. Granger.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So just a couple months ago, my sweet, precious 11-year-old daughter, who's a voracious reader, got a letter by an owl telling her she was a wizard, which I guess is a real thing. Like, I guess it's a real thing. So whatever. We like believed her and we took her, I don't know, to this thing called the Leaky Cauldron, and people explained things. Bada bing, bada boom. They like touched a couple bricks. Suddenly we're shopping. This all happened last year, you know, like our first time going. Yep. Okay, so now we believe it. We believe this is real. Our daughter at least went away for half a year mm-hmm. and then came back for Christmas and then went away again. We believe this thing's real.
You're getting in my frame.
So, but let me tell you, I don't know how I feel about these wizard people, right? We go book shopping.
Mm-hmm.
You know when you go to Barnes & Noble?
Sure.
And like you maybe get a Starbucks, you find a little corner to sit in, it's cozy.
Love their, Barnes & Noble.
Their bookstores are crazy. Crazy. First off, there's cougars. And I don't mean the animals. I mean the moms.
Yeah, okay? Everywhere.
Everywhere.
So much leopard print.
There's some guy who like his picture on his books winks at you and goes, every time you walk by, what's going on?
His teeth glisten.
And then there's dad fights. I've never seen a dad fight in my life in the real world. But in the wizard world, this must be a thing. I'm not prepared.
not enough wine on this planet to get me through that. And I'm a dentist.
She needs a...
I'm a dentist.
I'm gonna need to take some laughing gas before I go to Diagon Alley next time.
Is this real?
Yeah, she like leaves. They like go farewell. They go home quickly, like through the Leaky Cauldron, because that's how they need to get home. They're like, peace. Arthur Weasley asked us for a drink. We saw what he did to the last guy he talked to.
Mm-hmm.
Dicked him. It is time to go.
For me, I'm gonna be Draco because I have to be Draco in this one. All right, you know, I'm going to this Borgin and Burks thing. You know when you go to a store that your parents want to take you to, but you definitely don't want to go?
Filene's.
Oh, Filene's is that store. Oh, my God, a Sears. Like, when you go to Sears, like,
oh my gosh.
You know you're in
Home
for at
least, Goods.
You're in for an hour of just looking at...
When you're a kid.
Lawnmowers and tools Sears. And...
Refrigerators.
And like, what are we doing?
This is Sears.
This is a total Sears.
Borgin and Burks is the equivalent of the dark art Sears.
It's got everything, but it all sucks as for a kid. And
yeah.
Dad, you told me you were going to buy me a present. What are we doing? Can I just get my present? I'm going Please. For an hour through all this stuff. When you're talking to this Borgin guy about whatever you're talking about, and it don't make no difference to me because you're the one who has all this stuff, stop haggling the price. Just give him the crap, take the money, and move on. We got enough money as it is. We're the Malfoys.
And... Dad won't even let me touch the cool stuff.
No, and he's going to get me this stupid...
No, he wants his broom.
He wants his broom, but I can't use it anyway, so what good is that going to do to me? Go get me a PlayStation.
Give me the hand.
I want the hand.
I want a necklace.
Can you get me the opals? I'm into opal. Maybe it's my birthstone. I don't know.
It says it kills muggles. I know a muggle.
I'm in on killing muggles. I definitely want Hermione dead, because she sucks.
Okay.
So... I just feel like, and then freaking Harry Potter, this kid, all he does is just show up and everybody loves him because of the stupid scar on his head. Maybe I should get a maca and just put a scar on my head. Maybe people will like me.
Imagine him doing that when he went home for summer break.
Looking in the mirror.
And just putting a scar on, seeing if it made him popular with his hometown friends. Hey, what's that? Oh, nothing. Just a scar.
It's just, I just got it. I just got it because I was in a fight. And you know,
instead of a lightning bolt, it would be like a sun. You would draw like another weather phenomenon. Maybe it'd be a raindrop.
Yeah, it would be a raindrop because like it's
be emo.
Yeah, he's super emo about it. He's like, yeah, I just got it. It just happened because you got a little bit of a smudge there, Draco. You're like, don't touch it. Okay, it's fine. It's magic. Pig fots. Okay.
And then he bumps into Hermione.
Oh God, I bet you he has a secret crush on Hermione.
I don't think it's secret, Blake. The entire Potter fandom thinks that Draco has a crush on Hermione.
No, I don't think there's anything textually that suggests an actual crush. But I feel like if you look into it hard enough, there's a crush there.
I think so.
I think that just...
How does he know that she gets all the good grades? How does he pay that much attention to her?
Guarantee she's going around telling everybody that she's getting A's. That's why I want her dead. I want her dead because... She's too cocky.
Okay, let's go on. Email and questions.
All right.
Mail's here.
All right, let's see. Rebecca says Draco wrote her name all over his notebooks. All right, mail's here. Let's do it.
He tried to write it in Tom Riddle's diary, but it would just erase.
Oh, good stuff. Good stuff. Okay, here we go. Let's do it.
Oh, Miles here.
All right, this one comes from Leah. She says, I'm not sure if anyone addressed this yet because I'm behind in the episodes. That's okay. That's what we're here for.
Totes.
First-time mom with 15-month-old living in South Korea.
Hey, hello.
With no daycare or family support system and a husband who works 12 hours a day, so my time is not my own, unfortunately.
So sorry, my friend.
Girl, we got you. You come listen to us. But she's a long-time fan of us since before Outlander.
Aww.
So thank you. I, like Blake, started my journey with the Hot Potterverse via the movies. It was only when I moved to Korea in 2013 to teach ESL that I downloaded the audiobooks and listened to them while commuting to and from work and while exercising.
Very cool.
I'm so amazingly happy that you guys decided to do a podcast about this world. And as much as I love, love, love your Outlander cast... It's your Potterverse and how much I super really want to join Blake's book club. Go to jointhenerdclan.com to do that. That it's inspired me to figure out how to become a patron. Anyway, number one, pudding. This is a Britishism. It's a general term for dessert. For Americans, pudding is kind of specific to dessert. But for the British, it's any kind of sweet confection served after the main meal. It's like how they say dressing gown and we say bathrobe.
Cool.
Number two, question and a thought. When you guys started your podcast, it inspired me to go back and re-listen to the books. My original plan was to follow along chapter by chapter with you guys, but of course, you know, the pull of this world and I got sucked in until I had to finish book 7. So it occurred to me that the house common rooms are all hidden for the most part from members of other houses. You have to climb through a hole in the wall hidden by a portrait who demands a password to get into the Gryffindor Tower.
Yes.
Harry and Ron search for a long time in the dungeons before they get lucky and get brought to the Slytherin quarters by Malfoy, also under the password protection here. And Harry needs to be shown where Ravenclaw Tower is and must answer a riddle before being allowed in. So that makes me really curious about the relationship of the four founders. Seems like they were guarding against attack from other houses.
Oh, yeah.
Hiding and protecting their headquarters like that.
They do not trust each other.
So, do you know if there's anything in any book, screenplay, fanfiction, etc., that tells the story of the Hogwarts and the Four Founders? How much would you love to see a movie series based on Hogwarts
and history
like they did in Fantastic Beasts? I would love it.
But that would be amazing.
I'm a huge history nerd. So this one comes from Leah. What do you think, Mary? Is there anything about that, like in the rest of the Potterverse, that would suggest a history of the how the four founders interacted with each other?
I think so.
I would at least be on the Wizarding World.
Yeah.
Or what was once Pottermore. So. I would imagine that it's.
Let me check my app, my Wizarding World app.
No!
If not, I've read it in fanfic, but I'm like 99.9% sure.
So. So yeah, it's definitely got to be there. If you wanted more about that, Mary has the Wizarding World app coming right up. I'm sure if you wanted to discover that, it would be at the Wizarding World app. Just sign up for it. You can find out your wand and your Patronus and a whole bunch of other cool stuff too, and find out your house. I'm sure that there is something there, but you know, it is what it is. All right, so for everybody, that is the last of the emails that we got, but for everybody that is watching us live on the show as of right now, and there are plenty of you watching us, this is your time to ask us some questions. Just make sure that you put the lightning bolt emoji before the question so we know it is in fact a question, and we can get to it. Let's see, we got one.
Oh, already. While we're waiting, Blake, yes. What book would you have wanted if you were at Flourish and Blotts? What kind of book would you have wanted?
Well, like my girl Leah here, I would want a history of Hogwarts. I would love to know how it got started. I would love to know about the founders, why certain things are the way that they are, all the different rules for Quidditch, and like I'd be all in on that. Nice. Just give me everything all about it.
Nice.
I want to know all the deep dark secrets. I want to know everything.
I like that.
I don't want some sanitized version. Give me all the dead bodies and all of it. I'm in.
I would have wanted a wand lore book. Like what makes the wood and the core and the length makes them work, because I think I would have liked to make wands and try out different wands.
Yeah, that'd be a good one. I like that.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
Then I would just ask my friends, like, hey, can I borrow yours? Oh my God. Does this have Dragonheart string? I can tell.
Okay, let's see. We got some more questions here. Asenath asks, which author would you guys swoon over?
Swoon? Like, hold me back. This person's so tasty.
Yes.
I don't know.
I think I'd kind of be into the lady who writes for the Quibbler.
Oh, this is a fictional author. Real life author, and I'm like,
you know, like Molly swoons over Gilderoy Lockhart.
You would have liked Rita Skeeter?
I think I'd be kind of in
it. The Quibbler?
No, she wasn't write for the. Did she write for the Quibbler?
No, that's Luna Lovegood.
That's Luna Lovegood. What did she write for?
The Daily Prophet.
The Daily Prophet. That's what it was. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Yeah.
I would have swooned over.
I would kind of be on Rita Skeeter. You want to know why? Because she don't suffer no fools. She gets right to the story. She gets right in on it, and she's a Slytherin. I'm in. I'm all in. All right. Well, who would you swoon over, Mary?
Nobody.
Nobody.
I don't really swoon over that many famous people.
You don't, actually. That's a good point. Rebecca asks, putting the books aside, if you had to choose between the Goblet of Fire and the Order of the Phoenix to watch forever,
whoa,
which would it be and why?
Whoa. I would watch forever.
I would watch
Goblet of Fire forever.
Oh, God.
No, God, please, no. No. No.
I'll tell you why.
No.
In one moment.
Sorry, Michael.
When the screaming stops. Because there are still happy moments. And if I had to watch it forever.
There's happy moments in Order of the Phoenix.
Not really.
Sure there is.
Not really. When?
When they all get together. Finally.
When they...
When Sirius dies?
Well,
no, not when Sirius dies, but when Harry finally gets to hang out with Sirius again, and he talks about the family tree. And
that's not a really happy moment.
No, but that's
though.
A loving moment. He hugs Harry.
Loving and joyful are two very different things.
But
they
may be different, but they are in the same.
You.
They're in the same family.
No, listen, you can watch your movie. We'll just live for eternity in different rooms with different TVs.
They make fun of how old Dumbledore is.
I don't, babe. Let me tell you,
that was a happy moment.
I love aspects of Order of the Phoenix, but I think I would be so depressed if I had to watch that movie over and over again.
I love that movie so much.
I know.
Order of the Phoenix is just the best.
It would make me depressed all day. Heather Wilson says, would you be a Gilderoy groupie or a smiling skeptic? His blatant narcissism is a big turnoff for me. I have some PTSD from my divorce, but I can't help but eye roll about his own self-love. I'll tell you this, Heather. Blake would be on the Gilderoy Lockhart train.
Absolutely.
100%.
I'd be fascinated by him.
Yeah, he'd be like, Mary. You'll never believe who's at Flourish and Blotts.
This guy hung out with werewolves, Mary. You can't believe you. It's incredible.
I'd be all set. I'd be at Ollivander's for the whole day.
Anna Ashley says, "What is Flourish and Blotts again? Was it one of the stores? Yes,
it was
Flourish
the
and Blotts is the bookstore. Yes. Let's see.
Caitlin Marie says, how would you react to the dad fight? Love Molly's reaction. She was more worried about Lockhart seeing than Arthur getting hurt.
That is probably Mary's.
That would be, that was like, fit. I mean, if I did swoon over Lockhart, that would have been my reaction. I would have also been like, are the kids okay?
Sure.
Because the kids were cheering him on. The boys were super pumped that their dad was in a fight. And then all of Ginny's free books are sprawled all over the floor. Goodness gracious.
Let's see. What else we got here?
Okay.
That's it. That's all we got so far.
That's all we need.
Yep.
On that note, my friends, we were going to see you later this week. I'm excited.
Yes, absolutely. We got the Whomping Willow next.
Yeah.
This is going to be a fun chapter, too.
It just starts picking up from here.
I feel like this is when the book starts to finally start taking a turn. Like, it's turning the corner now, and we're going to get into it.
Yeah, it's like, okay, you either know who these characters are because you actually read the first book, or you're caught up and we're ready to go on this ride.
Yes,
let's absolutely miss the Hogwarts Express and miss my favorite line, but your hands all sweaty.
All right, Marvin, so we've been here for an hour. It's time to get going here. All right, let's close it out, shall we?
Yes, we shall.
I don't have the Baco's theme, unfortunately.
Good. Ew.
I couldn't find it, so we're just going to have to go with
I'm totally okay with that.
With the normal clothes.
Thank you. I'm more than good for strawberry peanut butter ice cream clothes. On that note,
you're talking over the whole theme. John Williams is freaking out right now.
He's totally out.
I called him the other day. Good friend of the show, by the way, John Williams. I said, hey, listen, Mary has this habit of talking over your music. I don't know why.
I'm so sad that we couldn't go see him at Tanglewood this summer.
Me too. We're going to stay at that really horrible motel again.
This is the worst sleep of my life.
That was the worst place I've ever been to stay. We stayed at some janky motel in the Berkshires.
Blake like loves to come up with these really romantic ideas. And yeah, then sometimes...
But I don't have the money to pay for it, so...
I'm pretty sure there were bugs in the mattress. It was really scary. Okay, so on that note... we're excited to talk about the Whomping Willow, but I really want to thank those of you who went to jointhenerdclan.com and became patrons there for as little as $2 a month. It really makes a huge difference in us being able to continue the podcast and all of the blogs and everything that we do. So thank you so much.
Yeah, guys, thank you. So go to jointhenerdclan.com if you find any value in the things that we do here at the Potterverse or any of the shows at the Mary and Blake Media. We're here for you guys, and we're going to have some fun together. And hopefully at that point, we'll be able to afford better motels. So,
on that note, my name's Mary.
My name's Blake.
Mischief managed.